Hey, it's the Shilling Show. We're here on a Tuesday edition. David Murata is the president of Murata Wealth Management. Online at muratahonmoney.com. And today, we have something called the Gone Fishing Portfolio. We're going to tell you about what it is after we say hello to David. David Murata, welcome back to the Shilling Show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
I want to start off with the recent market volatility, because it's really funny. The last time we were here, I made a comment to you saying, you know, the market has been really calm and we haven't seen any of these, 200, 300, 400 point swings for a while, and everything's been just kind of static. And then all of a sudden, it wasn't long after that that we saw the market down, I guess, 1,000 points, 1,100 points at one point, down 1,600 points. So those are some pretty serious volatility in the market, and I just wanted to get to that before we jump into today's topic.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We get a little bit of movement in the markets, and it's actually not all that big a deal. On average, every year the market goes down sometime in the middle of the year. It goes down about 14%. That's the average. Mm. Last year was remarkable, actually, in its low volatility. Daily volatility was only 0.3. Normally it's up at 0.65, and in volatile markets, it's all the way up at 1.2. Last year was the record-breaking year, first year on the Dow, where 12 consecutive months, every single month was up.
Wow.
The S&P 500. The S&P 500 has never had that before in the history of the S&P 500. The inter-year drop, instead of being the average of 14%, was 3%. That is the lowest it's been basically ever in any market, going all the way back to, you know, the 1929, 1920s. It's also the longest stretch in 2017, the longest stretch within 3% of a high of the Dow, the most record-breaking Dow days ever. So last year was a remarkable year in the fact that the market just seemed to go up a little bit every day, and it was very, very consistent, and then it would come down a little bit, and then it would go right back up again. So this year, you know, a little bit of volatility at the beginning of the year is not unheard of. February is actually the second worst performing month in the year. September is the worst. It's still better to be invested in September and February, but February is not a great year. March and April are usually pretty good years, or pretty good months. Sorry. A little bit of correction, and what we try to do is to not worry about the correction. When the correction got started, a lot of people pulled their money out, and a lot of people don't understand how the market works. The market goes down when people pull the money out, and the market goes up when people put their money in. When there are more sellers than buyers, the market makers get to move the price down on everything. And even though most of the stockholders are neither buying nor selling, very few people can move the markets. So the fact that it began to come down a little bit, and then a lot of people panicked and pulled their money back out, when those people put their money back in, the market goes back up again. And on average, the people who pull their money out and put their money back in get in and out at the exact same spot. So they don't really gain anything. If you're really smart, you know, it begins to go down, you pull your money out, and then you put your money back in almost immediately after it's down a little bit. But for every person who does that, there's a person who pulls it out late and then gets back in at a higher price than when they pulled it out. So the movements in the short term in the market are really a zero-sum game. And if you take all of the days throughout the year and match them up, they all net out to zero with about maybe 6 days that make the entire movement in the year.
So there was a lot of discussion, David, about what was behind this. And I heard some discussion about computerized trading or bots or something like that. And I'm wondering if you could address that. Is that what was behind this? And is there something that needs to be done to curb that sort of trading?
Yeah, and I think the short answer is no. It's true, computerized trading can sometimes move. It almost always works against the people who put in limit orders and sell orders. In the flash crash, the market began to move down. A lot of people's limit orders got triggered, and they sold the stock on the market, and they just kept selling and moving it down. That was the flash crash several years ago, and in one day it dropped down to 50% and then came right back up in the same day. And a lot of people just simply lost 50% because they sold on the way down, and then by the end of the day it was trading right back where it was at the start of the day. That was a very slow day on the market. We were madly trying to buy stuff because everything was on sale. And if you want to put in limit orders, you should put in limit orders to buy anytime the market drops. It's a much better deal to buy when the market drops than to sell when the market drops. It's the only time when things are things are on sale in the markets. But most people's brains are wired for the exact opposite. The markets always want to know why. And that's the financial news media. They're always trying to figure out why. And I have analyzed their reasons for why, and they're almost always just made-up reasons. People got worried about this or worried about that.
Higher interest rates was tossed around.
Higher interest rates, great. We've known about higher interest rates now for, what, 2 years?
Yeah.
Back in 2002, we were talking about higher interest rates. So it's been at least 16 years I've been waiting for higher interest rates. I'm still waiting for higher interest rates and inflation and things like that. The Fed has kept it low. So I don't think that was a surprise somehow in February that made the markets go down. The reason why the markets go down is because there's more sellers than buyers. That's why. So a little bit of the market correction can get people to panic. And when you panic, you just sell out of the markets on the way down. Now, is the U.S. market a little bit overvalued? Ever so slightly, but it's within one standard deviation. And it's actually a lot more fairly valued now than it was a week ago. So it's a much better time to invest. We think, along with Warren Buffett said, don't just do something, sit there.
Well, this is a good point because I was going to ask you, most people get really jittery. You know, I'm lucky that, and I didn't used to be this way, but I just don't worry about it so much anymore.
Yeah.
But I know a lot of people, they're looking, they're online, they're looking at the red ink on their screen, and they're going, okay, I've got to do something right now.
Yeah.
How do you counsel people who feel like that?
We probably have at least 15 blog articles on our website about how if you don't do anything, you do better as an investor. If you buy and rebalance, you get about 1.6% more return each year than if you just buy and hold. But most people buy and chase returns. And buying and chasing returns, Morningstar did a study and found that mutual fund investors underperformed the very mutual funds they were invested in by about 1.4% because after the mutual fund had gone up, cash flowed into it. And after the mutual fund had gone down, cash flowed out of it. With exchange-traded funds, it's even worse because a lot more people trade those throughout the day. A lot of people with mutual funds put it in and forget about it. With exchange-traded funds, Morningstar found that they underperformed the very exchange-traded funds they were invested in by almost 4%. Mm. So they're almost losing 4% of their value simply by not being a contrarian and rebalancing and instead just chasing returns.
I'm guessing that last year was an outlier. And if we looked at this year, and we're early in the year yet, that people should anticipate more of the sort of volatility we saw in the last few weeks?
Yeah, the average volatility was about twice as much as it was last year. So if we just have an average volatility day, there'll be, each day it'll be up or down maybe about, 0.7 or 0.65 or something like that every day. The months will be up and down. They won't always be an up month. And somewhere in the middle of the year, we'll have a 14% downturn. Last year, the 3% downturn we had was almost all in January. It could very well be that the 14% downturn that we have will just be this February. And then from then on, it won't ever go down more than 14%. It will continue to go back up. And the 14% downturn is even for years that end up 15, 20%, just somewhere in the middle, there's a correction. Because the markets are inherently volatile. And it's been said the markets in the short term are voting machines. People panic and they just vote some way. But in the long term, they're weighing machines and they're just weighing the health of the U.S. economy and the earnings that are coming into all the publicly traded companies.
When we come back on the other side, I was just going to ask you to give us just about a 20-second preview of the Gone Fishing portfolio, and then we're going to get into the details of it. So tell us what that is.
Yeah, a Gone Fishing portfolio is a portfolio with just a few stocks that should weather the ups and downs of the market fairly well while only rebalancing maybe once or twice a year. We give away Gone Fishing portfolios. We've got four of them this year that we're offering on the website. They're free. They're for the do-it-yourselfers who want to implement it yourself. We just think investing shouldn't be expensive.
Okay, so we're going to get to that and the details of that on the other side of the break. We're talking with David Morata, the president of Morata Wealth Management. He's online at moradaonmoney.com, and we'll come back on the other side. And if you have comments or questions, we'd love to hear from you as well. The number is 434-977-1070. Samantha stands by to take your calls right now, politely and professionally, at 977-1070. And The Shilling Show returns with David Morata right on the other side of news and weather. Hey, the Shilling Show continues here. Coming up in hour number two, Buddy Weber from the Monument Fund will be joining us, a legal update on this attempt to eviscerate history and just wipe it off the face of the map and what's happening in the courts. We'll get to that with Buddy Weber in hour number two. Right now, we continue with David Murata of Murata Wealth Management, the Gone Fishing Portfolio. So we were talking before the break about this. It's relatively straightforward, and it's something that people don't have to think too much about during the course of the year. How is it that it's arranged in that way? In other words, what sort of things make it that way?
Yeah, what we've done, I mean, it's if you just wanted to invest in every stock in the world, there's a single Vanguard ETF or mutual fund. It's called the Vanguard Total Stock Index portfolio, and you could invest in that, and you would have equal shares in every single company in the United States, in the world, developed countries, and in emerging markets. And it's a very inexpensive way to just invest in the stock market. So
that's like truly a no-brainer because you're not thinking about anything other than how much money you're going to put in it.
You just keep putting money in that, and that just is invested in every stock in the world, and that will get you the world market.
And how well has that approach done if you look over the years historically?
It does great because it's invested in every single country in the world, and if some country is doing well, you've got a piece of it. And you can truly look through that portfolio into individual holdings, and you can say, how much do I have of any company in the world? And it will tell you you have some fractional shares of that company, and it's in, you know, Israel, and it's a tech company that does medical technology or something like that. And it's a great way to invest in the world inexpensively. The expense ratio on that fund for the exchange-traded fund is just 0.1%.
Okay.
So incredibly low. We build portfolios in our Gone Fishing portfolio that are about 0.24. Mm-hmm. We do a little bit higher expenses for some things. And what we try to do with ours is we try to overweight the components of the world that should do better and underweight the components of the world that should do worse. So it's just trying to take the every stock in the world and saying, you know, some of these stocks are going to do better and some of these stocks are going to do worse. And there's factors that have been proven to boost performance. Small cap does better than large cap. Value stocks do better than growth stocks. Countries high in economic freedom do better than the countries that are low in economic freedom. And emerging markets tends to do a little bit better than developed markets. And so what we do, we build a portfolio that is lots of stocks in the world. You're still invested in broadly diversified index funds, but a little bit better than the stocks, than just the world markets as a whole. And so instead of investing in one fund, it invests in 12 funds because you're trying to overweight the components of the world that do a little bit better. Hopefully that will boost your returns by a little bit and make investing a little bit easier because it'll grow a little bit more. And for those people say, you know, what's the difference in growth? You know, is it just 1% better? Or is it, you know, 0.5% better? If you can invest in something and you can get 1% better return over your working career from age 20 to age 65, 1% better return means you will retire 50% richer or 7 years earlier.
Wow, that's significant.
It is. So 1% is huge. So if instead of an investment portfolio that's only has expense ratios of 0.2, if you're in the average mutual fund, your expense ratio is 1.2, you will actually not have those gains. You'll have to work 7 years longer or you can retire 50% poorer. So it really does matter, the cost of investing. And low-cost investing has been shown by Morningstar. They did a study and found that low-cost investing was a better predictor of future returns than Morningstar stars. So Morningstar concedes that if you just pick low-cost funds, you will do better than if you go by the Morningstar stars or anything else. And past performance isn't a great predictor at all. It's not only past performance doesn't guarantee future returns. It would be better if they said the disclaimer, past performance has almost nothing to do with future returns. In fact, it might be even inversely correlated. So the performance of a fund in the past 3 to 5 years is probably a negative indicator as much as it's a positive indicator. So it's just random chance when one fund outperforms another fund. And therefore, low-cost index investing generally is a much better way to go.
David, you mentioned economic freedom, and I know this list changes, and I just wanted to briefly cover the nations that are most economically free, so people kind of know what direction to go in.
Yeah, the countries that are the most free, we use the Heritage Foundation's Index of Economic Freedom every year. And every year we take a look at those rankings, and we look at, they do five different categories. The top one is free. The second one is mostly free. Then it goes moderately free, mostly unfree, and downright repressed. Mm-hmm. And it goes from Hong Kong, which is number one, all the way down to North Korea, which gets a couple of points for being a country.
Is there a way to invest in North Korea?
No, there's not.
Okay.
But if you think about it, even if you could invest in North Korea, the difference between North Korea and South Korea is amazing. South Korea, as we've seen, is a great country that has a lot of development going on. Most of the indexes have now moved it out of emerging markets and into the developed countries because it's got such a developed market. Well, the same thing that is true in North and South Korea is also true in North and South Europe. Countries like Germany and the Netherlands and Norway and Sweden are much freer than Portugal, Italy, Greece, and Spain, the pig countries, mm-hmm. they call them, because they're so high in debt and deficit, and they have such large taxation burdens and such onerous regulations as to be not a very good place to invest. So the countries that are in the free category are Hong Kong, Singapore, Australia, New Zealand, Switzerland, Chile, Canada. And then you find the United States and Germany up at the most top of the mostly free category, the Netherlands, Austria, Sweden, and places like that. And these countries, on average, we think beat the rest of the developed markets maybe by about 4% per year, which is huge. You can imagine how that will boost your returns. And you've probably heard, a lot of people say, oh, don't invest anything in the foreign markets because on average the foreign markets underperform the U.S. markets. And that's true. The foreign markets do underperform the U.S. markets. That's because the foreign markets are a mix of free and unfree, and the U.S. markets are free because the U.S. market is one of the freest countries in the world. So if you just invest in the free countries, you'll find yourself cherry-picking certain developed countries, and those countries will perform better, we think, than the foreign index as a whole. So if you find yourself invested in just some foreign index fund, and it's a mix of a lot of different things, then you probably have great shares in Portugal and France and Italy and Greece and Spain and Japan, which are not as free as the free countries. And that's why in our Gone Fishing portfolios, we go ahead and use five slots out of maybe a dozen just to cherry pick the best foreign countries. Mm-hmm. That's why we do that. There isn't an easy way of just investing in those free countries. You actually just have to invest in them one at a time. But for those of you who like the United States is one of the freest countries in the world. It takes 3 days to open a business in the United States. It takes a year and a half in India, but you can only get it done if you bribe the right people.
Wow.
If you don't bribe the right people, you'll never get it done.
Let's talk about bond allocation, and you have principles here in putting all of this together, but how should you look at bonds versus stocks?
Yeah, if you're young and just getting started with investing, you don't need any bonds. Really, your withdrawal rate determines the bond allocation, so in retirement, you want 5 to 7 years of safe spending on the bond side, and that means that you can put the rest of it, your investments, on the stock side because in 8 or more years, the stock market should do pretty well. When you should start having that bond allocation is kind of an open question. Certainly within 7 years of retirement, you should start having that bond allocation. Our Gone Fishing portfolios start a bond allocation exactly in the percentage you should have if you retired that year. And what that means is if you want to retire at age 50, the bond allocation is appropriate for retiring at age 50. If you wanted to retire at age 40, the bond allocation is appropriate for starting your retirement at age 40. So the bond allocation gradually grows because your withdrawal rate goes up higher and higher the older you are, and the less years you have less, and the less years your money actually has to last. So we have the bond allocation, which we think is appropriate. I should say, however, that our bond allocation at age 65 is still 75% stock and 25% mm-hmm. bonds. A lot of financial advisors, I'll back up, a lot of so-called financial advisors will recommend that you have maybe 60% stocks and 40% bonds. The 60-40 portfolio is a very vanilla portfolio. Some even go as much as 50-50 stocks and bonds. The Journal of Financial Planning has done lots of studies, and they have all suggested that at age 65, you still want 75% bonds, because at age 65, you're just beginning a 30 or 35-year portfolio withdrawal. That's a long time. You want most of it on the stock side. So you want 75% stocks and 25% bonds. Why don't other financial planners make that recommendation when it's so clear in the industry and the studies that that's the right recommendation? My own jaded response is that they don't want you to fire them, and no one fires their financial advisor when the markets are up. And if the markets are down and you're 60-40 or 50-50, you will be down less than we are at 75-25. Even though in the long run, the 75-25 it gives you a greater chance of meeting your goals and a longer return and a better return, still they just don't want you to fire them because they care more about you not firing them than they do about you actually meeting your goals. So I would suggest that most people who have some kind of a balanced portfolio of 60-40 or 50-50 don't have the optimum portfolio and probably should take a look at that.
977-1070 is the phone number. We have one segment left with David Murata. We're talking about the Gone Fishing portfolio, and we'll tell you how and where you can get those on the other side of the break, as well as a little bit more information about what goes into putting them together and what might be appropriate for you. Stay tuned as The Shilling Show. We'll be back in a moment.
Pittsburgh are rolling down that eastern seaboard.
The final segment of this hour of The Shilling Show, David Murata is our guest, Murata Wealth Management, Gone Fishing Portfolio. You had some interesting numbers for us about employment and also about people investing, and I wanted you to share them with the audience as a manner of encouragement, because there are great opportunities a lot of people not taking advantage of.
Yeah, there's about 50% of the people who have anything invested in the stock market, but there's only about 15% who have something significant being maybe over $50,000. You know, there's a better chance of growing rich slowly than growing rich quickly, and wealth is what you save and invest, not what you spend. I did an analysis just to say, well, the amount that you can fund your Roth IRA this year, and a Roth IRA, you put the money in after tax, and it never gets taxed again in your life. Mm. So it's a great deal. Everyone should be funding their Roth. Those who don't have a Roth but have traditional money, traditional IRAs or traditional 401ks, should be converting some of that to a Roth every single year. So the limit for funding your Roth this year is $5,500 per person. So if you're married, you can both fund it and put in $11,000. But even someone who's single, who just puts in $5,500 and earns a modest 7%, between 20 and 65, they will retire at 65 with about $1.6
million. Wow.
And just to be clear, this is better than $1.6 million if you win it in the lottery, because this $1.6 million is tax-free because it's in a Roth. It will never get taxed again. So you can take it out anytime you want and spend it, but as long as it's in there and it continues to grow, it is tax-free. The difference between someone who funds their Roth every year at $5,500 and someone who does not is the difference between somebody who whines about not having enough money and someone who's actually funding their future. Your future self really deserves that money as much as your present self does, and you really should not impoverish your future by spending all the money that you make and not funding your Roth. Funding your Roth at $5,500, I think, is the minimum anyone should be doing. We really should be saving about 15% of our take-home pay. If you think about it, if you're saving 15% every year, then after 6 years, you've maybe saved 90%. So after 6 years, you've got 1 year of retirement saved up. If that money is not invested, that 1 year of retirement really does not cover very much. But if it's invested, it doubles and doubles and doubles again until finally in retirement, it might be 100 times what you put in at age 20. And it really does grow about 100-fold between age 20 and age 65. So for every dollar you save in your 20s, you're saving $100 in your retirement. And that's the magic of compounding, and it's the magic of investing. You're really, at that point, you're a business owner, and being a business owner in every company in the world means that you get a share of the earnings of whatever does well in the world.
So why is it that so few people take advantage of this? Is it a lack of education? Is it fear? What is the reason people don't jump in?
Psychologists would say it's because we're born as hedonists who live in the moment, and it takes actually a lot of development before you have a future-oriented thinking. And it takes a lot of visioning, if you will, about the future. And it turns out successful people end up having a future orientation. It's a future positive orientation. They're not dreading the future, but they're planning on it and looking forward to it. Wealth management is based on the principle that very, very small changes can have very large effects over long periods of time. And so if you recognize that, just a few things to change your habits is what you need to do. Changing habits is very, very difficult. It takes a long time to develop that. Better is to put in place things that automatically do what you want to do. So automatic payroll withdrawals that go into your 401k is automatic investing. Taking your paycheck and putting it into an investment account and then only transferring to your checking account that you spend out of the percentage that you want to spend leaves behind in your investment account whatever you have decided. And that way, when you get a raise, it goes into your investment account, you take out the same pay, and you've increased your savings. So we use a lot of tricks and techniques to try to automate the kinds of behaviors that we want to do. And a little bit of planning, even once, that puts those automated things in place takes the place of a whole lot of willpower. Because willpower is difficult. You only have so much willpower throughout the day to stick to it, to your job, to eat right, to exercise, to save and invest. And so the more that you can delegate to automated systems that willpower, the better it is. And that's one of the tricks and techniques of just trying to make your life better automatically without a whole lot of willpower behind it.
We've got about a minute left, David. And you'd mentioned earlier, you know, that it's easier or you have a better chance of growing rich slowly than growing rich quickly. But there are so many people, and this is probably the human condition, that fall for these get-rich-quick schemes or even think they're going to go to Vegas or do a horse race or something and just make a huge amount of money and then they'll be able to retire on easy street.
Yeah, there is no shortcut. In fact, one of our principles is if it sounds too good to be true, run away from it. my father taught me that principle very young. I remember one of my brothers came home with a get-rich-quick scheme. It was a 50% return in 6 months. They were importing Portuguese wine or something crazy like that. And did my dad want to get in on it? My dad said, no, that's not possible. It's got to be a Ponzi scheme. And my brother said, well, can I invest my money in it? And my father said, no, because it's not possible. It's too good to be true. It's got to be a Ponzi scheme. 2 weeks later, it was on the front page of the Washington Post. It was a Ponzi scheme. So I learned that at a very young age from my dad that there is this thing called too good to be true. As a financial professional, I read a lot of the fine print trying to find the catch. And usually I can find the catch because usually it's not a Ponzi scheme. It's just a terrible idea. But every now and then I find something where I can't find the catch. They're just lying to me. And all the information I've been given are lies. And I've learned to be okay with I can't figure out how they're scamming me. But I know they're scamming me because it's simply too good to be true.
If the people want to get information on the Gone Fishing portfolios that you've put together, tell them quickly how they can do that.
Yeah, we give them away for free on our website. It's marottaonmoney.com, M-A-R-O-T-T-A onmoney.com.
All right. A fantastic hour. Great advice, David Marotta. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Let's go to the break. We come back on the other side and we have.